Welcome back to Develop Lex. Today you have Weston and Ross in the studio, and we are doing two guests at the same time, but one company. Today we have on a couple of guys from the Haymaker company. We have Andy Haymaker and Josh McKern in the studio, and we thought it would be cool to have a couple of people from the industry on at the same time to talk about the history of the Haymaker company and just kind of what they do day to day, but obviously has been a big figurehead in the city of Lexington. So guys, welcome on.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, gentlemen.
So let's go back and just introduce you all. So maybe just introduce yourselves individually, and then we'll get into the Haymaker company today.
Sure. Andy Haymaker, second generation in this company. My dad started it eons ago, and now he was the guy, now I'm the guy. So from an introduction standpoint, I guess that's it.
Josh McKern, I'm the Director of Development, or Business Development and Communications for Haymaker Company. A little bit of background, from Chicago originally, moved here about 10 years ago, and now working in a development company with Andy, and a good friend, a good company, and great family to work with.
Yes. Legendary Lexingtonians.
Yeah, so let's talk about kind of how the Haymaker company has gotten to where it's at today. So if you could just give a little background on, you know, how the company started, you know, projects, all that kind of stuff, and then let's get to kind of present.
Sure.
Day.
No, my dad had always had again, like I said, I'm second generation, so I'll give as much of that early history. I was just a baby, kind of. He had always been in corporate real estate. We came to Lexington when Valvoline moved their headquarters here from Ashland. We were in Huntington before that. And, you know, we could go on forever on the interim steps. Dad was always a real estate guy, wanted to keep doing real estate instead of moving into other parts of the company that they were proposed. So when he left Ashland, he was at the old original First Security Bank, was the real estate manager there. And after a while, it was, you know, time to fly your own flag. And so he went out and did that. I believe it was 88 or 89, somewhere in that general area. I was in high school at the time. I had no official anything, but I was there every day. And I cleaned the office and took the trash out and overheard and, you know, learned by osmosis a lot, you know, at that age, a lot of what I do. So first thing was commercial brokerage, but from First Security, the trust that had the land that became Beaumont was that was part of the trust. So again, a lot of interim steps, but we ended up developing Beaumont on, you know, it always had a commercial side of the business. The development side was, you know, we got into it through the ability and the fortunate and good fortune to be at the right place at the right time and be able to do Beaumont, which is at Harrodsburg Road and New Circle Road for anybody that doesn't know where that is. So that was a nice, you know, mixed use development that we were able to do at that point. And there's been a lot of other developments in between. We've done, from a development side, the Pinnacle subdivision on Tate's Creek Road. That's where Veterans Park Elementary is. We've done the Summerfield subdivision on Winchester Road, Tuscany, also in the Hamburg area, Winchester Road area, Century Business Center. You know, in the gist of all that, or in the midst of all that, we, you know, own a lot of buildings and, you know, always had a brokerage arm and a property management arm as well. So we've brokered quite a few deals while doing all that stuff. And without getting too deep and too tall into the weeds of everything in between, that's as condensed a version as I can probably get, you know, make it.
This episode is brought to you by Bank of the Bluegrass. It's easy to preach about being a community bank without actually operating that way, but I can attest as a real customer of Bank of the Bluegrass that they are truly in the community and for the community. Whether it's closing a real estate transaction that needs some creativity, troubleshooting an issue where you need a real person on the other end of the phone, or just the simple fact that when you walk in the door, your banker knows your name, Bank of the Bluegrass has you covered. Plain and simple, the best bank in town. Bank of the Bluegrass, member FDIC. NMLS 421548, equal housing lender.
DevelopLex is sponsored by SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate, a full-service commercial real estate firm located in Lexington, Kentucky, affiliated with the SVN International Network, which is comprised of over 1,600 advisors and staff and 200-plus offices across the globe. The SVN Stone team consists of experienced commercial real estate advisors in the heart of the Bluegrass. SVN provides commercial real estate services to large corporations, middle market businesses, and individual entrepreneurial investors. Serving the greater Lexington area, SVN offers advisory services for sales, leasing, management, and development of commercial properties locally, regionally, and nationally. With transaction volume of over $400 million, the advisors at SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate have vast experience and deep understanding of all aspects of commercial real estate.
Yeah. So I would say timestamp Beaumont a little bit. And then if you would, because that's one of the more notable developments in Lexington, I would say. I used to grow up sledding at that YMCA. I was trying to think what I used to do there. If you would timestamp that a little bit and then talk about, you know, the whole process behind that. You know, most people that have lived in Lexington for the last 15, people don't think of that, as having any sort of pushback or, really being developed. It's just always been there. So if you would kind of talk about that development a little bit.
Yeah. To be fair, like I said, I was just, when it all started, you know, it's funny how in real estate, a development, you may say one development, how quick did you do it? Well, one development may go 20 or 25 years sometimes, depending on your absorption is and how big it all is. I was in high school when it started. So on any kind of, you know, I was there, I kind of knew all about it, but I wasn't, you know, in any way involved in doing anything other than I would go to the zoning meetings and watch and all those kind of things. So, yeah, there was a lot of pushback from the surrounding neighborhoods. You know, it was the typical pushback you get from everywhere. You know, it was going to be too much traffic and, you know, people are going to come into our neighborhoods and, you know, there's too many people going to be out here now and they're going to ruin our green space that we've been looking at forever. And, you know, all the, just the typical stuff that neighborhoods push back on and, you know, which we get that. So,
it's fascinating that those NIMBY don't change over years.
Never change. They never change. Well, yeah, they do. They get worse. I take that back. Yeah, yeah. They change in degree, but not in the basic infrastructure of NIMBYism. So there was quite a bit of that. You know, you just have to overcome it. If you're going to be in this business, you know, there's an old, I don't remember who said it, but the saying is, how do you get a skin? You earn it. So you earn your thick skin in this business. You're gonna, you know, people are gonna disagree with you. That's okay. Sometimes they make it personal. Sometimes they don't. And you just got to kind of get through all that stuff on the front end and know that what you're doing is going to be a benefit to the community. And you do the best you can under the rules that you have and under what you're allowed to do. And hope it turns out the way you want. And I think in certainly in the case of Beaumont, what my family started out there has turned out to be an asset to the community for sure. I don't think there's too much pushback on that now that it's, you know, pretty well done. Again, it's been 20 for 10 or 15 years. I didn't have much of anything to do with it. The last 5 or 10 years, I pretty much finished the whole thing out, not exclusively, but close. So, it's funny how that comes from, I don't know anything about it to, you know, now I'm the only one that knows anything about it. So it's kind of been a neat project there, but that's kind of how that came about. You know, we wanted to do, from the very beginning, it was a place to live, work, and play. That's kind of was the motto out there, and we've been able to do that well. We've got all the restaurants. It was the first, at least in Kentucky or Lexington, the first Waffle House that wasn't on an interstate. You know, yeah. So we've got the restaurants. We've got backs up to. We've got a trail system there, it connects you to the Harrods Hill Park. We've got the combined, you know, retention pond green space system that gives an appropriate amount of green space and handles the, you know, it was a nice way to do a combination of being able to make some things look like a park and handle your runoff and your drainage and all that regionally as well. So that was, I think, an asset. We've got schools out there, you know, well, one school, but we're right across on Man of War. We're right across from Dunbar. So I think it's been, you know, it was a successful project. It was hopefully one that everybody gets to, in this business, would get to look back on someday and say, well, we did that.
Yeah. And so you all have done commercial development and residential development. And I think for me, I'm fascinated by residential development because I just don't know much beyond get some land, draw some lines on a paper, and try to build a house. what else is there?
Okay, so on the residential development side, you know, there's Lexington's a little bit unique, in that, you know, we're kind of that, we're a small, large market, but a large, small market. You know, we're kind of right on that borderline. So in much of the larger markets, developers and builders are kind of one and the same. You know, you'll have a national building, it's the Pooltys of the world, or, you know, take your pick on the big Toll Brothers or whatever. They'll go take a piece of land. They're the developer. They'll put in the infrastructure and they build the houses on it as they look at it as a builder and how they want it to do that, you know, for a long time. And then when that's what Ball does locally, but we're not really a big enough market to have more than sort of that one player that way. And so we have a lot of custom home builders here, guys that might build 5 to 10 to 15 houses a year, sometimes a few more and sometimes a few less. So what we've been able to do is hit that market for years and years and years. So we will identify the piece of land. Hopefully it's zoned right. If it's not zoned, we just know what's appropriate for a piece of land, what's the highest and best use, right? So we'll take it through the zoning process if it's not already zoned, then take it through the development plan process. You know, we're looking at the market, we're talking to the builders that we deal with, and the ideal lot sizes, here's kind of what we're going for house size wise. This is what we think the market, you know, where the market is, and through that whole process. Once those plans are approved downtown, then we install all the infrastructure. So, you know, all the streets that you, all your neighborhood streets and all the sewer and all that kind of stuff, those aren't, we do that construction, we pay for that, we install it. That's part of what the development process is. And then you dedicate them to the city when it's over. So they become, they're city streets, but the city didn't build them. So a lot of times it's, for anybody out there that doesn't know that, the city didn't build the streets, we did. But we build them to the city specs, and they oversee it, and they have inspectors and all that. So, and then once that's there, the it goes to record, and that's where you have actual lots to sell. And when the market's good, sell them all, you know, the day they go on the market. And when it's bad, you go, oh, I hope somebody buys all these lots. Yeah. If that's, you know, does that kind of answer your question in terms of process? And, you know, I'm trying not to elaborate. You could go on for some of these things on the little interim steps forever.
I'm sure days.
Craftsman Contractors is Central Kentucky's one-stop shop for roofing, windows, siding, and gutters. CraftsmanContractors.com/contact us will get you straight to the form you need so that their team will get in touch about your project. Or just text Steven at 859-246-0108. When they finish your project with windows, siding, gutters, or roofing, you'll see what they mean when they say we build with integrity. Are you looking to start or scale your real estate portfolio in Central Kentucky? Check out Rapid Fire Investments. They find off-market, discounted real estate deals just for you, so you can save time and maximize profits. From single-family homes to multifamily apartments, no matter what your investment goals are, Rapid Fire can help you reach them. Sign up for their email list today and get notified when new properties become available. Just go to rapidfireinvestments.com. That's rapidfireinvestments.com.
So if we could back up a little bit, well, two things that I noted. First, it would be, you said that you didn't have much experience with Beaumont when you were in high school, but I bet it was a world of knowledge getting to go to those zoning meetings when you were in high school. I can only imagine how much that of a leg up that gave you. Two, if you could tell us a little bit about the zoning process and what that entails. I think that oftentimes there's a little bit of ambiguity that goes into what exactly that looks like, because everybody knows that, like, you can get something rezoned. But what has that looked like in your career? I'm sure that there are different degrees of difficulty behind different rezonings.
It is. And today, especially the last 5, 6, 7 years, it doesn't really look near as much as what it used to look like before then. When council, Josh's city council, passed imagine Lexington and something called, there's a document called Place Builder that's a part of that. Lot of new and different processes and rules and criteria that they use for analysis downtown as to whether how they would want to grant a zone change if and or when, what's the path to get that done. The first thing is just some common sense when you're looking at a piece of land and go, does this, what I want to change the zoning to, going to stick out like a sore thumb? Does it seem to blend in? Does it make the most sense? So that's before you even get any kind of real process. It's just be reasonably smart about, you know, what you think you want to do. Back in the day, it was sort of you file for the zone change, you get you hire a lawyer, and if it was a big zone change, and you went down and you talked to the planners and you said, here's what we were going to do, and they, you know, you went back and forth with the staff a little bit, and they thought it was a bad idea, you generally knew, and if they didn't, you know, sometimes you were at odds and you kept going anyway, and so you got it to the point where you would get them to make a recommendation to the planning commission. So staff is who you dealt with and still do deal with first. You try to get as much of their buy-in, if that's the right word, or feedback as possible early on, and hope that their thoughts agree with you. Always a good idea to talk to neighbors and neighborhoods surrounding what you're wanting to do. Because that's where a lot of your pushback comes from. And even if it's a good idea, that even if the planners like it, they have to consider some of what those neighbors and neighborhoods think and what the community thinks, some of these things. So, you know, once you get all that and put it together, they'll make a recommendation to the planning commission. Planning commission will approve it or deny it. Hopefully they always approve it. And then you would go to, the city council, and council would back that up usually, or overturn it. Typically they wouldn't overturn a yes, but if you got a no at planning commission, you hope you could get a yes at council. And that happened way back. That happened a lot. It was always very, very, very contentious at zoning hearings when you got downtown. That's changed a little bit now for a couple of reasons. And Josh, I can't remember, have they officially changed it yet where you don't have to go to council anymore unless you want them to overturn. There was some talk, I think, about whether you were even going to have to go to council.
You can still go to council.
You can, but do you have to?
If you want to overturn
something.
It has to go through council.
Yeah, I knew that.
Inevitably.
So, yeah. But Place Builder has you know, it took a while for guys like us to get used to it. It's got a lot more. They hate it when I call it a checklist. I won't call it. I just don't know what else to call it. You know, a lot more criteria for what they're looking for. So they're trying to be sensitive to the neighborhoods around there. They're trying to get all of that fluff and disagreement and infighting and all that stuff. It seems to me through the new deal, it gets a little bit of that out of the way early. And there's mechanisms in there now for, you know, how you have to notify neighbors so you're not kind of blindsided. Some of those kind of things in that process. So it's ultimately, I think it's, once everybody's gotten used to it, it's fine. It took a while to get used to because it was a big change. But it's a good process now, I think, as long as you know the rules going in. We're all fine if we know what the rules are before we start playing the game. And I think Place Builder has done a reasonable job of that, in my opinion.
So Josh, tell us about the Haymaker Company and different arms of what it is today. Got to hear a little bit of history, or if you want to give a sneak peek of where it's going.
Sure. Well, and I mean, Andy's going to help chime in with this one too, but it was multifaceted. Most people know us as a commercial real estate company, but we do construction, we do development, property management. We've got a construction team that's growing, extensively right now and pretty rapid. If I may, I'm going to jump in and talk about some of our Dollar General deals. We're expanding Dollar Generals out in West Virginia. What is there, 40 to 60 stores we're looking at over the next couple
years?
Yeah,
we can't do all that at one time. That's a lot, but that's,
not all the same
time. You're looking at those, yeah.
You know, it's a large project, and it takes a long time to do. But then we go do the site selection. So it's the commercial real estate side. Then you develop it. You have the plans for it. Then you build it. And then afterwards, if they would like us to, well, we'll manage the property as well. And so we kind of hold every arm in that. Where the future, where we're going to go as a company, grow. You know, obviously we're here centrally located in Lexington, central Kentucky. We want to see our home base grow. We want to develop here, continue being a key player. You know, Haymaker has been a great name here in Lexington for years. And, you know, we're I wouldn't say a giant, but, you know, it's there's a lot still to go and love to spread around throughout Lexington for all the developers. As long as we can develop something, well, that's where we have to find it.
It's interesting what Josh said when he started talking about the Dollar General stuff that we're doing, because in the development world, you know, in Lexington, no matter which side of the debate you're on, the land development opportunities are extremely limited. And that was our bread and butter for eons and eons and eons. And so, you know, whatever happens with the boundary at some point in the future, that's still a ways off before anything's ready for anything. So, you know, you adapt. And so, you know, we were fortunate enough to get in with those guys. And so we do instead of large, you know, massive land development now for residential lots and even commercial lots. You know, we're a Dollar General developer, you know, all the service stations of the world, you know, Sheetz has some of those, Target has those, Publix has those, you know, those quote unquote preferred developers. We've just been lucky enough that Dollar, had faith in us to join their program. We got West Virginia, so it means travel now that I never had to do before. But as part of the, you know, you just had to adapt when the traditional models in Lexington it's going to be hard for them to work anymore. And we're not the only ones that'll make those adaptations. I mean, everybody's going to have to do that.
Andy mentioned to work Place in Builder the, just a minute ago, yeah. And that was an adaptation that we had to make. I mean, all in the development community, it became that framework that every developer had to go by, and you weren't used to it. And it, for lack of a better term, you mentioned checklist, but it became a checklist. And it's great now when you look back at it because it does help eliminate so many things in the process as you continue moving forward, working with neighborhoods, working with, you know, the planning team and staff, and making sure that everything is checked off before you get to the next level. Well, some of us object to it, but it does have a nice framework to it sometimes.
Never, ever be peace in the valley, for sure, no matter what.
I hear that if you get Josh knocking on doors, people just say yes. So
I will tell you, I was after Josh for a long time. I mean, he's got the personality for this business. That's for dang sure. He's not an introvert. I'm sure you know that. He knows everybody. He knows the ins and outs of how government works. He spent a lot of time down there, which is wonderful. So, yeah, it's not an automatic yes, but it's easier. He's the man.
If you guys would, I think it'll be really interesting because we haven't talked about this on this show. Everybody in the world, if they go on any sort of road trip and go down I-75, will be like, oh my gosh, there are so many Dollar Generals out there. I think that everybody that's listening to this podcast can at one point remember a time when they were sitting in a car, they were like, I just saw a Dollar General 2 minutes ago.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about how you guys came into that opportunity and what that actually looks like, what the process of that looks like. Because we've talked briefly about site selection with CJ May on here before, and that's just one facet to it. There's so many. But if you would, talk about the Dollar General development process a little bit and working with those guys.
I will gladly do that. Of course, this has nothing to do with Lexington development anymore, but I'm still happy to talk about all that. That's great. So when you're that kind of a preferred developer, generally they'll whoever you're representing in those deals, they'll give you a list. Here's, you know, again, Josh mentioned it. Here's 50 stores and 50 locations that we want. You can't do all those at once. I mean, they understand that's the sort of the big wish list. You figure out what you can convert. You know, sometimes they want to go into a market that's there's just simply in West Virginia, especially, it's a mountainside. you know, there's a river and a mountainside on one side, a mountainside on the other. And as much as we all want to go there, we're just going to cross that off the list because it's topographically impossible, you know.
We tried site selection for a car wash chain, me and Nathan Dilley from my office, and we thought we were just going to go into West Virginia and just find whatever. We allocated 2 days to drive in West Virginia, and we were like, oh my gosh, we could have done this all on Google Maps because you won't go to a developable piece of land for an hour. And then all of a sudden, the mountains will open up, and there's every retailer in the world on one little
because path. It's the only semi-flat spot of land. In fact, we have a whole term. There's no flat. We call it West Virginia flat. You know, is it flat? Well, it's West Virginia flat. Yeah.
14% grade.
Yeah. It's not 40%. It's just 22%. We could make something work. You know, just a little retaining wall. So you kind of mark the you know, you kind of try to identify the low-hanging fruit, and then you also mark off the nice try, but this is never going to work part of it. And you know, the good part is from a site selection standpoint, they're doing that. They have a whole big market planning division that identifies where they want to be. And then your job is to go in within, you know, a certain radius of that point and find if there's something that's, you know, convertible to a real that you can turn into a store. In West Virginia, it frequently involves, you know, buying a piece of property with a building on it and tearing something down that's already there. It's old and dilapidated, or maybe it's, you don't run into, we don't have zoning problems in West Virginia because there's hardly any zoning anywhere. Now the cities do. Morgantown has it and Huntington has it and Martinsburg. But by and large, you don't run into those kind of issues because there's just, well, for several reasons. But at any rate, that's, once you do that, you're buying the land. You know, you're putting the land under contract. You're Dollar General, and this works pretty much. This isn't a sort of proprietary process. This is pretty common. Whoever you're working for will approve it. Once they approve it, you know, you got a budget there, the whole nine yards. That's how they're setting rent, and you know, got to know what you can build your building for, and all those kind of things to make the deal happen. So then we buy the land, we go through it, we go through the planning and zoning departments there. Even if they don't have zoning, you have planning departments who. Here are the rules, here's the set, but, you know, all the kind of stuff you have to face with the technicalities of, you know, does the highway department, is there enough site distance where it is and all that kind of stuff. So you go through all of that stuff, and once you get them to sign off on your plan, you build it and they move in. Now, in terms of how many there are, and they're pretty sophisticated. So even guys like us that do it, we kind of, you know, we get all the emails of, hey, there's a dollar, you know, I can see a Dollar General. Let's put a Dollar General here. You know, some of those fun things. Their model works. I mean, they're not, you know, but when you're a company like that in general, and, you know, sometimes you're playing defense too, you know, who your competitors are. And so you want to, you know, discourage any competitors from coming in. So, you know, if there's sales to be had there, you'd rather take them than have somebody else take them. And it's sure of their business as a general store that's not the supermarket kind of store, you know, a couple of miles is, you know, the whole point of what they do and their whole customer is somebody that doesn't have to drive 20 minutes to go to a grocery store, or, you know, to get a gallon of milk. And in West Virginia, especially, I mean, you won't see it as much in urban areas. Well, maybe you will eventually, but. You know, you just kind of see them. Everybody's like, well, it's right out in the middle of nowhere. I can't believe, well, you know, there's nothing around here. Well, there's enough around there that, you know, that's kind of what works for them because they have, they fill that void of, you know, it's not a joke. There's a lot of places in rural areas, and it's Kentucky the same as West Virginia or, you know, Arkansas or Mississippi or Alabama, you know, where you have, you know, rural populations that, I'm out of milk, and it's a 40 minute round trip to get a gallon of milk. And Dollar and those type of stores really do a good job of filling that void and having what their customers need at prices that, you know, rural areas tend to not be as affluent, you know, so they can sell product that meets those, you know, meets the needs of their customers and is convenient enough to do it. So,
yeah, they're solving a problem.
They're absolutely solving a problem, and mm-hmm. and you know, I I get it when sometimes people kind of make, seriously, there's one on every corner. Why do we need another one? It's like, well, because people need to go there and get what they need. And, you know, it cuts down on commutes. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where and I didn't mean to interrupt you, Ross, but this was one that just absolutely came up not too long ago where we had a little bit of pushback on one and a lady had, it was a rural area and she didn't, you know, we got what we needed, but there was some pushback on, well, you know, what's wrong with driving 20 minutes to the store? You know, not every place has to be so convenient. That was like, well, okay, but let's think a couple of other things through. One, that $2 or $3 or $4 gallon of milk, if you're driving 20 minutes, it's at least 2 gallons of gas. So that $4 gallon of milk is now $12 gallon of milk because of how much gas you burned. Plus, no matter what side there is the carbon footprint part of that. I mean, you're having to drive a long ways and then there's what's your time worth. So, you know, when you kind of put all that together, it's, you know, it's fun to make fun and we do it too. We have a good time with it, but they truly do fill a need.
Well, yeah. People don't bat an eye for how many gas station convenience stores there are in an urban setting. And it's simply anything, a more expansive C-store without the petroleum.
No question. So. In fact, they're making a big push right now. They've got a model called the PM market where they're adding, and it's been very successful. So they're trying to shift more and more of their stores over to a market, you know, where they can have produce. That's the one thing the customers say they want that they can't get because, you know, is still got to go to the grocery store to get produce. Even if Dollar fills a lot of those needs, they can't get the groceries and the produce. And so they've got a model now that's offering quite a bit more of that. And it's been very successful for them.
The West Virginia horses they ride to the store have to get their carrots
that's
somewhere.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. Now don't put an ice cream cone in your pocket. You know, that's what that's all about. I'm going to tell you, that's a little tidbit. You know, that's the ice cream cone in the pocket law.
Stealing a horse.
That's right. You're the only person I've ever known that's known the reason for that.
Ross is the most obscure fact guy I've ever met.
Lord.
He is. He knows.
Found a soulmate.
Obscure knowledge. He knows a lot of obscure facts.
Yeah.
Well, let's shift back to Lexington and let's shift to, just some takeaways that you guys have had along the way, through the development process and just, being in the real estate industry. What are a few of the lessons or what are a few of the experiences that you've had, that if you were to offer the listener, some value that you could talk on? Loaded question, I know.
Yeah, and who's the listener? Are the real estate professionals or the general public? I mean, I don't.
I would say people trying to be involved in real estate, whether it be brokerage, investing, development, anything.
I would say on the brokerage side of things, when you get into it, if you want to get into it, it's a great business. Got to be prepared to be hungry for a little while. It's not easy. A lot of people think it is, but it's, you know, no different that from that standpoint, I feel like it's no different than, oh, I'll just go sell real estate. Okay. Yeah. there's a lot to it. So make sure you really know what you're doing before you decide that's what you want to do. I've always, you know, we've never done residential real estate in terms of a brokerage. I mean, we have a brokerage, but we have some residential agents that they are, you know, we own the company, but we don't. Me personally, I've never had anything to much to do with it. The commercial side of the business, for me personally, it's more numbers, it's more strategy, it's more, like corporate strategy, trying to fulfill somebody's corporate mission and what they're trying to resolve. It's not there's not emotional decisions, and it's just kind of, I like it that way better. I mean, I'd rather look at pro formas than property disclosure forms or whatever it is that they have to, I can't even remember what they fill out. that just works for me, but it's not super easy. And when you get deals done, it still takes a little bit of time. I mean, you're in the business. I don't have to tell you how all this stuff works, you know, sure, I'll do it. Well, okay. There's 15 contingent. Don't spend the money. Don't spend the money until after it's closed because you run across a rat or two as well. In fact, my dad used to teach a class not teach a class, but it would do a guest lecture one or two days for a real estate finance class they used to have at UK. Back when you could say things like he would go into the thing and he'd say, well, the first thing you need to know about commercial real estate is always wear a nice boxer shorts and what'd he say? And a button-down shirt or something, an easy shirt. And he's like, looking at it, what the hell are you talking about that for? He goes, well, at some point you're going to lose your shirt and you're going to get caught with your pants down. and probably couldn't say that in today's world, but back in the day you could. And it was always, you know, that's probably the best lesson you could get was just be ready for anything because there's, you know, there's no such thing as a sure thing. But
I think that's the quote of the podcast right
it's
there.
It's reasonably sophisticated. Yeah, I mean, leave it to him. He's always got the best ones. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that answered your question, but it's not something I've thought of. I mean, I probably gave you some advice when we were talking to it. What did I tell you?
Well, coming in from the residential side, and when you look between residential and commercial real estate, they're night and day from each other. One's more of a business sense, nine to five, eight to five. Another one is you work a lot of evenings and weekends. But one's more emotional and one's a little bit more business minded. And commercial, yeah, it's you're going to go hungry for a little bit to get there, sure, because, well, you have to create that and establish that relationship. And sometimes it takes you a year or so to find a location and to close the deal. Where a home could be 30 days, you know, maybe. Sometimes it's 45. And in this market, it's pretty quick, too. But you don't also have the emotional side to it as, hey, I don't like the color of this wallpaper or this wall here. In commercial real estate, you don't have that. It's a little bit different of an environment. Diving into it, though, I'm going to go back to what I said in the beginning. You know, I said there's in Lexington's market, but in central Kentucky, there's so much business to still go around for each other. Even though we're in a little bit different of an office environment and we're running a little more scarce on industrial land, there's so much business still. So don't let it stray you from getting into the market. Or deter you from looking in Lexington or around this area because we'll work to find it for you.
And then if you would talk about kind of the future, obviously there's different facets to the Haymaker Company. Talk about the future of the Haymaker Company and then kind of roll into, and maybe we can kind of do this in closing, what you see the future of Lexington looking like and what you would want for the city.
You know, I will, for the company, you know, I'm going to come back to the adaptation. I mean, we have adapted. And we'll continue to do that. Doesn't mean if some of this stuff, if the boundary truly expands and there's, you know, some available land that we won't go back. I say back, that's not the right word. That we won't stay into that business and continue to do those kind of projects. But, you know, we will adapt not just to new sets of rules and new market conditions there, but with who we are as well. I mean, you know, one of the things we've always done, you have the development side of things, but you know, sometimes that's, it's feast or famine. That's the most cyclical. Commercial real estate is cyclical, as you know, no matter what, but that can be the most cyclical part of it. And you know, when you feast, it's great, but it's feast or famine. And when you famine, it's famine. And so, you know, when you have, alternative streams of revenue and business, the management companies, the brokerage companies, even in bad markets, the brokerage companies work. There are transactions. The average size of the transaction may be less, prices may be going down, but you got people that need to get out of deals. There's always opportunity somewhere. Somebody's growing a company that needs more space and somebody's going out of business that couldn't make it. And, you know, you're the whole nature of that business is putting those people together. And so that kind of works no matter what the business, and there's always owners. Sometimes it's the banks that own property and not the individuals, but and if they do, they need their property managed. So, you know, those kind of business opportunities are nice to, you know, to rough out those feast and famine, you know, those peaks and valleys and those edges. Now that we've kind of got a feel for what we're doing on, you know, preferred developer types of projects with the Dollar Generals of the world, I don't see why we wouldn't continue, you know, sort of down that path as well. If you get the right people in there running them and working for you, that's going to still work. So, I mean, just sort of adapt and expand. you know, and you know, kind of get back to roots in the middle of it. The you know, the development side is just, it's smaller for everybody in Lexington that's done that kind of work. Everybody. Now, the other part is you start looking at different markets. That's, you know, so we've always been pretty exclusively Lexington. Would love to stay that way. Not looking to go anywhere, but reality being what it is, if you have to, you know, start looking at surrounding counties or other markets, we, you know, we'll do that as well. But we're certainly not going anywhere. I'm second generation, but I got the third generation of seniors in college right now, and they're hungry, and they love it, and they want to come to work. So we're going to make sure that as long as it's what they want, something's around for them to take part in and be proud of, I hope. As far as Lexington, man, I'm going to let you deal with future of Lexington stuff. It's that's a good one. I don't, you know.
Tough one.
It's
no.
I'd love to see us grow, you know, some more jobs.
I would love to see some more jobs too. We need rooftops. You know, affordable housing has been a conversation in front of us for a long time. You know, we've got homes that were worth $50,000, you know, 4 years ago that are now pushing $150,000. And conversation is constantly evolving around what we're doing for our growth.
Did I just see today median home price here is $375,000? Yeah. That's a lot. And that's, if you look at, I remember when it was 180, and that wasn't like 30 years ago. That was 10, 12 years ago. I mean, you start thinking about what kind of inflation that is.
It's, shelter has always been the largest CPI increase when you look at the main schedule.
Yeah, and it's tough. It's, you know, and that's where you always, that's the balancing act of some of the zoning and entitlement and development plan processes and you know, what you have to accommodate. Well, I made a joke earlier about, as long as people keep having babies and population keeps growing, this is something we're going to have to face. Every community in the United States is going to have to face, or in the world, for forever and ever and ever. So, you know, the process everywhere is so slow that it becomes expensive. And, you know, housing affordability is going to be a tough one to tackle, because it's not just, it's municipalities, it's real estate developers, it's financial markets, it's commodities markets, it's how, you know, I don't know how we build affordable housing going forward. We figure out a way to make money at it, I'd do it in a heartbeat. I just don't know how it can ever be done. It's not just land price. I mean,
you know, when your land price, home is $380,000.
Yeah, land price, as expensive as land is and is going to be, it's not. It's way more than that. Part of that is, you know, population that grows faster than the housing stock. And then now you got interest rates. Anybody building apartments, or there's finance departments that, you know, they got refinancing coming up, and if they're paying 6, 7, 8% on those loans and not 3 and 4% on those loans, the only way that cash flow works is to bump rents. So that's not helping. So I don't know. I mean, when construction costs are, we saw that 2 years ago. I mean, they were, what did we say, 20% a year? You know, everybody's like talking about 9% inflation. I'm like, over a 2 year span in the construction industry, it was probably closer to, if you combine those 2 years, it was probably closer to at least 30%, I'm going to guess. So now I know 1 year we were 19 or 20 in just in 1 year. So, and surprise, prices haven't gone back down. You know, they've reasonably stabilized, but they don't, you know, they tend to be sticky upwards. And at least have been so far. So that's going to be a tough nut to crack. It's going to be more people living with roommates. It's trying to get better paying jobs to get people that can afford them.
I think that's the key right there, though, is that you've got to have the job attraction. We've got to open our doors and stop saying we're closed for business. Lexington, you know, we're a very attractable city. We're affordable. It's a good place to raise a family. And these companies want to come here. Where do we find the land for them? Grow up, you know, buildings.
As up, not out. Not grow up.
Not mature. grow up. And if you can't find it growing up, then we have to grow out. And if we're not going to grow out and we're not growing up, we're not growing. And, you know, thriving cities do not stay stagnant. It's either you plateau for a few years and maybe, but either you start growing again and you keep going on the up and up, or you start the decline. Now, I don't know about you all, but I want the up and up. And this city has got that potential. We just have to stop turning businesses away. College students getting out of UK or Transy, you know, center, you know, we have the education system here. We want you to stay in Lexington, find a good job here. But if your median home is $380,000, you're getting out of school making $55,000, maybe, you're not going to be able to afford that on your own. You have to have roommates, or you have to, and if you have kids, the one in the mix.
It's hard to live these days. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. So, I mean, it's one thing isn't going to solve the entire issue, but bringing in good jobs to our region, bringing in good jobs to Lexington, helps the tax dollars for the city grow up, but it helps the regionalism if it's going into Clark or Scott or, you know, anywhere in the surrounding areas. You know, people want to live here in Lexington and then work outside, or work out, you know, work here and live outside.
I mean, it's you're right. It's all of those things, and it's the up versus out. That's something we've always said for eons. And the staff, you know, when you get into the Place Builder and the New Imagine Lexington, I mean, they've tried to address that in trying to encourage more density and some of that. And in the urban core, that's great. That by itself can't solve the issue, but you know, with what we have remaining. You know, it's just little, it's what we stems and seeds. And so you can get as dense as you want on a 3-acre parcel. It's still only a 3-acre parcel. There's only so much you can do. And those types of developments tend to be very expensive because you're very constrained. You tend to have to rework utilities to make those things. I mean, you know, all kinds of fun little extra expenses, you know, construction type of expenses to build those in tight quarters. And when you go out, you know, they still encourage more density as you go out. If you got a new green, what they call greenfield development, you know, would they love them to be more dense? The problem there, if you want to call, I mean, you know, it's great if the market will accept it, but in a Lexington, Kentucky, if you're out Winchester Road, or if you're out, you know, trying to convince somebody that has, you know, a dog or two dogs and one or two kids, and they want the backyard to play in and everything else, and trying to say, you know, you need to do that on 30 or 40 foot lots with no backyard. And there's going to be we'll try to do a little green space over here, you know, a couple hundred yards away. Mom can't be doing the dishes and looking out the back window while the kids are playing in the sandbox. So, you know, in New York and Chicago, people grew up that way. And culturally you're, you know, that's the way it's always worked when, you know, you go to the park and play when you're downtown in that kind of urban environment. Here, you know, I just still have concerns as to whether, you know, people want to live that way. And maybe they do. I'm certainly wouldn't be the first time I was wrong in my life. And if people could accept that is what it is, that'd be a good thing. But I think you just need a little bit of, Josh said it right. There's no one, you know, for all of that.
Well, we, you know, want to emphasize that on this show, like we're really, you know, looking for all perspectives so that we can gain insight on what the next step is. So I think that's a very appropriate way to answer that question, because there is no one answer. But maybe if we stack hands, we can figure out something.
That's exactly it.
Well, awesome.
Well, and we'll all
Chicagoans to move over here.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, that's right.
When Andy mentioned that a minute ago, I'm like, I don't want to put a 30-story building
there
next to a horse farm. But, you know, I do understand that same sentiment, except for we're going to come full circle here, because we started talking this conversation about NIMBYism, and it goes right back to that same thing, is that you want density outside of downtown. Yet you have neighbors that come and show up and say, we don't need this, we don't want this, this is not our neighborhood, doesn't fit the demographic or the upfit of our area, and it gets turned away. Well, where do you think those people are going to go? They're going to go over to Louisville or Cincinnati. Maybe they go over to a surrounding county. Well, that's business that we just lost. That's jobs here in Lexington that we just lost.
Yeah, like I said, as long as... It's an interesting catch 22. But you're never static. You're either growing or you're shrinking. It's never really going to be the same all the time. So if you don't want to shrink, which causes problems with tax base and crumbling infrastructure and all the, you know, bad things that come with an economy and a potential of a population that doesn't grow but shrinks and all that kind of stuff, then you have to accept the fact that, you know, growth is inevitable. Everybody that lives in a house, some developer did that at some point, and they love what they have. Most of them do, not everybody, I guess. But and so, you know, then you get into the argument or the discussion you always get of, well, it's not that we don't want to grow, it's how we grow. And it's like, well, that's the tough one, because it's then you get 15 different opinions on how you grow. And what's important to one guy is not important to the other guy. And so I don't, you know, stack hands, I believe is what you said. That's the best way to do it. It's just figure out that nobody is going to get everything they want. And don't be angry about it. Figure out how to make it work. You know, either side, doesn't matter who it is. Don't get angry about it. You know, change your plan a little bit. And if you're the neighbor, accept the fact that you get, you know, something's got to happen. And let's just try to get the best we can. And then, you know, once it's all over, our lives really are still pretty good.
Yeah. Well, we're thankful that Haymaker Company is part of that hand stack. And thank you guys for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, man.
Thanks, Shelman. Appreciate you guys having us on.
DevelopLex is a part of the Middletech family of brands. This episode is edited by Jacob Spencer. Emily McCarthy creates our social content that serves you daily.